Midnight has passed, and in the stillness of these hours, the hauntings are never silent. This is Real Ghost Stories Online, After Midnight.
It begins the way so many ghost stories do, quietly, innocently, almost forgettably. A child at play, a house humming, with the ordinary rhythm of family life, a village so small and unassuming that the thought of shadows lurking in its corners seems absurd. But if you've listened long enough to stories like this, you know how quickly the ordinary can fracture, and how once that crack opens, nothing in your life ever feels quite safe again. I want you to picture this. Florenceville, New Brunswick, not the kind of place people tell stories about. A village tucked into the green spine of Canada, where winters bite hard, summers fade quickly, and most houses stand with the stubborn grace of another century. The one we're stepping into tonight is a Victorian. Three stories, over 100 years old, all sharp angles and steep gables. The kind of place that, if you walked past it on a cloudy evening, you'd slow your step, not because you believe in ghosts, but because it has that weight. A history pressed into every beam and window frame. And inside that house, a 6-year-old child sits on the bedroom floor. She's cutting shapes into cardboard, drawing doors and windows, trying to make little homes for her toys. She's not thinking about the age of the building, or the lives that came before hers, or the way old walls hold secrets. She's just playing. Then she hears it, her name, spoken in a man's voice. Now her father has been gone for weeks, business trips, the kind of absence a child marks by days crossed off a calendar in a hollow seat at the dinner table. But in that moment, when she hears her name, her heart leaps. Maybe he's home. Maybe he's standing downstairs, bags in hand, smiling with that look only a parent can give when they've been gone too long. She scrambles to her feet, rushes into the hallway, presses her face between the rails of the banister, and peers down at the entryway below. And she sees him, not her father, not anyone she knows, just the shape of a man. Blackness molded into human form, standing perfectly still, a void where the details should be. No face, no eyes, no mouth, just the faint contour of where features ought to live. And yet, in that impossible way that bypasses logic, she knows he is looking directly at her. The scream that rips from her throat brings her mother running from the kitchen. By the time she arrives, there's nothing there, just an empty entryway. But the child is trembling, and that memory will lodge itself so deep in her mind that decades later she can still describe it with perfect clarity. That was the first time the shadow would return. Years passed. The family left Florenceville behind, trading the creaking Victorian for a new start in Washington State. The shadow man, however, wasn't finished. By 8 years old, she was living in a shared bedroom with her little sister. It was late at night, the kind of hour when children should be so deep in sleep that even a thunderstorm couldn't stir them, but she woke suddenly, unnaturally. Something felt off, not just the strange heaviness in the air, but that wordless instinct children have, the one adults dismiss as imagination, the feeling that something is wrong. She sat up, her eyes adjusted to the dim, and that's when she saw him again. At the foot of her bed, leaned forward as if resting his elbows on the mattress, was the same figure. His faceless head cradled in his hands, tilted slightly, as though studying her. At first, she thought her eyes were playing tricks, sleep blurring the corners of reality, but then it cocked its head just slightly, a gesture so small and so deliberate, it snapped her heart into panic. She dove beneath the blankets, trembling, sick to her stomach, and didn't move until the light of morning. But shadows don't need the night to move. Months later, she was standing in her bedroom, pajamas on, ready to sleep. She opened her closet door and in the corner, crouched in a disturbingly childlike position, was the man. Knees pulled to chest, head buried in his arms, like something broken, hiding. He didn't move, didn't lunge, just sat, and then he was gone. After that, he slid into her dreams, subtle, quiet, the way memories replay themselves. Except this wasn't memory. It was presence. Then, silence for years. It wasn't until Wisconsin that he returned. By then she was 11, old enough to reason away the odd prick of fear, old enough to explain away strange feelings as stress or hormones or overactive imagination. But fear doesn't always listen to reason. She'd walk up the stairs from the basement and feel her chest pounding, her pulse racing, her body reacting like prey in the presence of a predator. The basement was finished, modern, not the dank cliche you might expect. There was no reason to be afraid, and yet the fear was constant. Dark corners seemed darker. She started catching movement at the edges of her vision, a ripple of black that melted away when she turned her head. And the panic attacks began. Nights of waking in a sweat, heart hammering, terror surging with no cause. Days of frustration, of feeling watched but unable to explain why. Doctors might have called it anxiety, some early unraveling of the mind. But she knew it wasn't inside her. Something was outside, pressing in. And then one night, everything broke open again. It happened on one of those restless nights where sleep wouldn't come. She lay awake, her mind turning over school, friends, the usual teenage clutter, when a sound snapped through the stillness. A rattling, not faint, not subtle, the kind of noise that demands attention. Her dog lifted its head, ears pricked, body tense. That was the first confirmation. It wasn't in her head. The sound was coming from the closet. On the door hung a set of decorative beads, the kind that clink softly when brushed. Now they were rattling, violently, as if someone was shaking them. The dog growled low, pressed close against her side. Her eyes locked onto the closet. The moment she did, the rattling stopped. The beads still swayed slightly, the way something does when the force acting on it has just withdrawn. And standing there in front of that closed door was the man. The shadow, black as pitch, darker than the darkness surrounding him. A void that seemed to drink in every shred of light. But this time something strange happened. She wasn't terrified. In fact, she felt calm, as though the very sight of him quieted the panic that had haunted her for months. He didn't vanish immediately. He stayed. Solid. Present. Undeniable. She stared, and the longer she stared, the more that calm spread through her, like a drug coursing into her veins. This wasn't a dream, it wasn't imagination, it was real. Now it's worth stopping here for a moment because shadow figures are not new in folklore. Cultures across the world, across centuries, describe them. Sometimes they're guardians, sometimes omens, sometimes the embodiment of death itself. The common thread is their facelessness, their impossible darkness, their refusal to fit into the natural world. And perhaps most chilling, the way they seem to feed off attention. The more you see them, the more they seem to see you. For her, the figure became something more complicated than fear. It was, in its own way, a relationship. When she caught him at the edges of her vision, she felt uneasy, even nauseous. But when he showed himself fully, standing before her, she felt soothed, like a weighted blanket pressing down, like company. She began to notice patterns. His presence sometimes came with faint tapping sounds, subtle, like a fingernail against wood. Nothing ever as loud as the beads that night, but enough to mark himself, and over time she gave him a name, Shadow. Now let me be clear, this wasn't some harmless imaginary friend. He was no creation of a child's mind. This was something she never invited, something she never asked for. But when something follows you from childhood, across provinces, across states, across years, there comes a point where denial collapses, where you start to accept, maybe even negotiate. She spoke to him out loud. At first, it was timid. Hello. Later, more direct, angry sometimes. Leave me alone. When the fear swelled too strong, she'd demand he go, and sometimes he would, for weeks, even months at a time. But he always came back, and then came the twist no one saw coming. Her boyfriend. He was open-minded, but skeptical. He listened to her stories with curiosity, even amusement. But doubt lingered in his tone. Maybe it was all in her head. Maybe she was giving too much power to shadows and stress. One night, he challenged Shadow, out loud, provoking him, taunting him. A week later, her phone rang in the middle of the night. It was her boyfriend, his voice tight with adrenaline. He had been lying in bed when he woke with a start. His eyes were drawn to the door, and at the foot of his bed was something. Not a man this time, a cat, but not a cat of fur and flesh. This was a void, an absence of light, shaped like a feline. It crouched, eyes burning with no reflection. Then it leapt straight at his face, claws outstretched. He threw up his hands to shield himself, and just before impact, it vanished. That was the night he stopped doubting her. Shadow wasn't just hers anymore. He had shown himself to someone else, and if there was any question about intelligence, about intention, those questions were burning now. Because if he could change form, if he could appear jealous, if he could reach into someone else's bedroom, this wasn't just a shadow. This was something that thought, something that felt. The more she reflected, the more she noticed. When she was alone, Shadow carried a strange sadness, a heaviness, almost mournful. At times, even a kind of curiosity, like he was trying to understand her. But when her boyfriend was around, the air changed. The calm fractured. Shadow grew hostile, bitter, possessive. She felt it like a storm rolling through her body, jealousy and rage radiating from him. And those were the only times she ever truly feared him. For most people, this is the moment you'd call a priest, a psychic, an investigator, someone to intervene, to cast out what doesn't belong. But she didn't. She lived with it. Because as frightening as it was at times, it had also become familiar. That was the paradox of Shadow. He terrified her, yes. He made her question her sanity, made her body tremble in the dark, made her boyfriend wake with claws of nothing leaping toward his face, but he also comforted her. When panic pressed in, when life frayed, when loneliness crawled up her ribs, his presence was a strange balm. And that's where this story pulls into dangerous territory. Because when something follows you across continents, across years, it doesn't just haunt your house. It haunts you. It rewrites the map of who you are. The years rolled on. Sometimes he appeared frequently, almost daily, as if tethered tightly to her. Other times he disappeared for months, but she always knew he'd return. And so she began asking the questions anyone would when logic fails and the supernatural settles in like a squatter you can't evict. What is he? A ghost? That didn't fit. He wasn't tied to a place, not Florenceville, not Washington, not Wisconsin. He was tied to her. A demon? Maybe. But if he was evil, why the calm? Why the comfort? A figment of her imagination? Possibly. Yet how do you explain the cat leaping at her boyfriend described with the same qualities of the shadow man she'd known for over a decade? And the most dangerous question of all, did he want something from her? That thought curled around her mind like smoke. Was he feeding on her? Following her? Because she somehow allowed it. Or was there something else? Some unfinished business? Some connection deeper than she dared admit? She tried to draw lines in the sand. She told him off, screamed at him, demanded he leave. And sometimes he did. For weeks, for months. But always, he came back. Her boyfriend, now years into their relationship, became part of this tangled triangle. Shadow's jealousy thickened when he stayed over. The air in the room pressed heavy. Sometimes she'd wake with that icy certainty of being watched, her boyfriend asleep beside her, unaware that something stood only a breath away. And she began to feel something darker. Not just comfort, not just calm. Something closer to possession. That's when she realized she missed him when he was gone. Not relief, not joy, longing. Think about that for a moment. To miss the thing that once crouched faceless at the end of your bed. To ache for the presence that rattled your closet beads at midnight. To feel emptiness in its absence, as though the line between fear and attachment had blurred beyond recognition. It's the oldest trick in the book, isn't it? Darkness doesn't always come with claws and fire. Sometimes it comes like a friend. Sometimes it comes like love. And here's the part that should keep you awake tonight. She doesn't know what to do. She's lived with Shadow for most of her life. He's been with her longer than most friendships, longer than her relationship, longer than the places she's called home. She doesn't know if he's good or bad. She doesn't know if he loves her or if he's feeding on her. She doesn't know if the calm he gives is a gift or a leash. She only knows this. When she told him off the last time, when she demanded he leave, he did. And she hasn't seen him in months. And she misses him. She wonders if she should call him back, if he needs her, if after all these years, their connection means something more than fear, or if she's standing on the edge of something far more dangerous, mistaking control for comfort, mistaking haunting for companionship. So I'll leave you with this. Not every haunting slams doors or throws dishes across the room. Not every haunting screams its intentions. Some hauntings whisper. Some sink into you so quietly that you start to feel empty without them. Some make you wonder if the thing in the corner of your room, faceless and silent, isn't an intruder at all, but a partner. And if that's the case, maybe the most frightening question isn't, how do I get rid of it? Maybe it's what happens if I finally do.
Want more real ghost stories? Then press subscribe now so you don't miss any of the multiple new ghost stories we drop for you every day. Only here at Real Ghost Stories Online.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten, Rakuten.com.